You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, guys? Welcome into a new week here at the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, I'm one of the co-hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News, and one of the site experts over at 8.9 Seconds. So a bit of a bummer news for this week's inaugural show. Adam was helping his girlfriend move back to Indiana from Naples, and my dad's birthday was this weekend, and these are all great things. These are not the bummer things, but the bummer part is that we couldn't get the time down to record together. So unfortunately, we will not be having a normal weekly show this week. It'll be next week, but we do know the topics already, so I can kind of spoil them out. We wanted to talk about the schedule release, because that's super exciting. It'll be fun. We could probably do two shows on that, honestly. It's so much to unpack. But we couldn't get to that one. And then over-unders, Vegas released the Pacers win line at 47.5, I believe. It might be 48.5. I can't remember. But we wanted to talk about those and what we think about what that line means and all that. But that'll be next week. But if you want to listen to another show before this one will be really good. I'll get to what's going to happen here in a second. Go listen to the fan show from last Wednesday. It was super fun. We got another one of those coming out Wednesday. And for those of you hitting us up about those, if I haven't responded or if either of us haven't responded, I promise you we know you tweeted at us. We have them all saved in our own little files. We can keep up with it. But we got another one coming out Wednesday. Those have been an absolute blast. So if you want to come on, remember you can tweet at us at FriedmanAdam5, at TEastNBA, or at LockedOnPacers to come on. Total blast. We had a great time with the first one, and I think you're going to love the next one coming out later in the week. But for today, so earlier in the summer, I went on the Lakers Legacy podcast, and this isn't going to be a Lakers thing. It's going to be a Pacers show, I promise. And all we talked about is Lance Stephenson. And, you know, it was a trip down memory lane. It's how I think I talked about how I think he could fit in L.A. I talked about some of his fondest times here, how I think he's a way better teammate than people perceive, and all that stuff. And everybody loves Lance talk, so it'll be fun to review that. And the guy, their host I did it with, Jonathan Hernandez, was kind enough to send it back to me when we needed a show for today because of our unfortunate timing differences, me and Adams. So you should check out the Lakers Legacy podcast. They're on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod, and it's really fun. It's really good. I really had a good time on it. But second of all, just listen to this whole interview talking about Lance Stephenson. Who doesn't love Lance talk? So we'll just hop right in. Jonathan's voice will kick us right off.
All right. So tonight we are privileged to have Indiana Pacers columnist for the West Indianapolis Community News, writer on 8.9 Seconds, and host of Locked On Pacers, Tony East, with us tonight. Tony, are you ready to talk some EK Anibogu and TJ Leaf?
UCLA legends. And Aaron Holiday, don't forget. We drafted him
this
year, too.
That's true. I mean, I'm joking about that, but there is some Los Angeles relevance there, so it's not too far left. But no, seriously, we are actually going to be talking about someone more relevant to the Lakers specifically, and that is Lance Stephenson. And you know it's the dog days of summer when you have an episode devoted to Lance Stephenson. But Tony, I ask you again, how are you doing tonight?
I'm really good. It's a nice indie night. Just went for a run, so I'm really happy to be talking some basketball, though, since the game's just ended. Unfortunately for the Lakers, not the way they won it.
Absolutely, but they did have one very huge free agent signing, and I'm not talking about Lance Stephenson. I'm talking about LeBron James. But hey, you know, before we get into the Lance Stephenson stuff, at the time of this recording, it is July 19th, and obviously last night the big Kawhi Leonard to Toronto trade dropped, and with DeMar DeRozan going over to the San Antonio Spurs. And I wanted to get your quick thoughts on that deal, because as an Indiana Pacers fan, you guys have been in a similar situation dealing with a disgruntled star looking for a trade out with very specific trade requests on top of it just last year with Paul George, obviously. So with that being said, what are your quick thoughts on this whole Kawhi Spurs situation? And do you have some PTSD? Do you empathize with the Spurs? Yeah, I guess what are your thoughts when that trade dropped, and did it harken back to just last summer for you guys?
Yeah, it did feel really similar. You know, Paul George came to the difference is this. Paul George spent all season talking about how he wanted to stay and, you know, maybe the Supermax could sway him to stay, versus with Kawhi, you know, you felt like he only played in 9 games. You know, you kind of felt like all year you knew he was going to leave, and then Tony Parker saying his injury was worse than Kawhi's was like the last straw on the camel's back. So I think there was more optimism PG could stay, but when PG did request to be traded specifically to the Lakers at that time, you know, that from that point onward, I think it was a really similar situation to Kawhi in that, you know, the trade offers were really diminished because, you know, like we all know, the leverage is all gone for the Pacers. You know, they know they're trading. Mm-hmm. They thought they were trading a 1-year rental. It didn't turn out that way, obviously. So the value was so diminished. And if you'll remember, you know, Victor Oladipo had no trade value at that time. No one knew what Sabonis would be. So, yeah, it looked like with Kawhi, it would just be that, but just on a bigger scale, just because he's a better player than Paul George was. But presumably, the injury had some clouds there. But so I think they got quite a good return given the PTSD situation to get DeRozan and Poeltl. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk to you actually about that Paul George trade to OKC. You know, at the time, it was perceived to have been a stripped down package for Paul George. And at the time, it was also said that Oklahoma City is in a win-win situation here, even if Paul George walks, because they get to get off Victor Oladipo's $23-plus million a year contract. And in a way, people are saying that same thing for the Toronto Raptors, where, hey, you know, DeMar DeRozan was an icon in their city, and he is an all-star. But at the end of the day, even if Kawhi walks, they do get off his $25-plus million contract in the next 3 years, and they can cleanly rebuild. I guess for you, how would you compare the return that you guys received to what the Spurs received on their end? Because in my opinion, you know, DeMar DeRozan is a legitimate all-star. His game does present its weaknesses in terms of just being very mid-range centric and a guy who doesn't necessarily play too much defense. But having seen what Victor Oladipo progressed into in the last year, I would almost argue that you guys may have actually gotten a better package for your superstar in Paul George, who isn't of the same clout and caliber as Kawhi Leonard, than the Spurs did themselves, especially if you consider the fact that you guys got Domantas Sabonis, who I think has at least shown more flashes than Jakob Poeltl. But who knows? DeMar DeRozan and Poeltl are going to the San Antonio Spurs, and they seem to extract the best out of every player. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on the package that you guys received for your superstar and the package that the Spurs received for theirs?
You know, it's a bit retrospective, right? Because at the time, like you said, Victor Oladipo is perceived as this massively overpaid guy, and the Thunder are lucky to be getting out of his contract in this deal. Now, obviously, we know that that's not the case, and he's quite the good player. Mm-hmm. But I think that at the time of both trades, it looks like the Spurs did better. And I'm with you because on Sabonis, you know, I think he's shown more promise, but he had never even played center. You know, in OKC, they had him playing mm-hmm. the four. So, you know, I think that it was good for the Pacers at the time to get two guys who were undervalued and being used poorly in a given situation. And, you know, president of basketball operations, Kevin Pritchard, pulled the trigger on a big risk there, but it really paid off in his favor. So I think given at the time of the trade, I would say that the Spurs did a quote-unquote better job. But at the same time, you know, Poeltl could be anything. I really like Jakob Poeltl, actually. I think he's an underrated rebounder. But, you know, he could be anything. He might be on the bench behind Pau Gasol all year. And we've all seen what DeRozan shrinks to be in the playoffs. You know, if that happens, Pop's going to get so frustrated with him. So it could turn out to be a lesser package. But, you know, I think at the time, if you view the scopes at the time of the trade, I think they did okay.
For sure. And to circle back on how this relates to the Lakers, you know, for me, when that trade went down with Oklahoma City, I don't know what you guys were thinking. Obviously, with regards to negotiations with the Lakers, you guys were probably hoping for a number two pick, a lotto pick, something like that. And when the Oladipo trade went down, I still thought that that wasn't a great haul and that you guys could have essentially ended up with, even without Lonzo Ball or the number two pick, you guys still could have gotten Julius Randle, Jordan Clarkson, the number 27 pick, the number 28 pick. And I think this is one of the rare situations where every team involved and not involved actually made out okay, in terms of Oklahoma City obviously made out okay because they were able to somehow keep Paul George, right?
Yep.
And you guys made out okay because Victor Oladipo had that huge growth spurt and he made that leap last year into becoming an all-star, legitimately. And for us, that number 27 pick and number 28 pick, which presumably, I think it would have gone out in a trade if it was for Paul George. You know, I'm not exactly sure what the stipulations were on the negotiations between Pritchard and the Lakers, but I'm assuming if they were haggling over the number 27th pick, which by the time that Paul George got traded, we had already made, which was Kyle Kuzma, the Lakers would have had to give up Kyle Kuzma and presumably Josh Hart too. So in that sense, we're okay with keeping him as well. So it's one of those rare situations where I think everybody made out okay and everybody's satisfied. But for you at the time, were you okay with that Victor Oladipo package? Did you think that even a Randall Jordan Clarkson 27-28 package might have been better than that?
Yeah, I like Julius Randall. So I kind of liked the Lakers package in that sense. But at the same time, you know, the 27th and 28th picks usually turn out to nothing. And, you know, that was a home run draft for the Lakers, you know, to trade back from 28 to 30 and still get Hart, who looks like he might even start this year. Kuzma's been awesome. And I had Lonzo Ball number one, so who knows how that'll turn out. But, my picking order was an order I wanted number two, and then I wanted Ingram. And then that package you just talked about with Clarkson and Randall, 27-28. But those two picks didn't do a lot for me, and I don't like Jordan Clarkson that much. So it was pretty much just liking Randall. But I did like that more than the Oladipo trade package at the time. The one that really intrigued me was the Celtics considering an offer of Jaylen Brown. And that one would have been what I would have gone for if it was on the table. But I think you're right. Given how it all shook out, I think every team is happy with their involvement and how it went down. But yeah, to answer the question the way you're asking it, yeah, at the time, I think I liked the Lakers offer more than the Thunder's, but obviously it shook out in a way that proves that I'm not an NBA GM.
No, none of us are, clearly. but yeah, I'm glad that it worked out for everybody. And that's behind us, and we're looking towards the future now. And it's kind of rude of me not to have you give your elevator pitch. But before we get on with the Lance Stevenson stuff, if you want to plug your social sites and just give us a little bit about yourself and what you do for the Indiana Pacers, what you write about, and all the platforms you're on as well, go ahead and do so.
Yeah, I cover every game and some practices and media stuff for the West Indianapolis Community News. Smaller newspaper covers the west side of Indianapolis, if you couldn't infer that from the name. And then me and along with Ben Gibson are in charge of 8 Points, 9 Seconds, the fan-sided Pacers blog that's been kicking and screaming for about 8 years now. So I'm kind of all over the place with my Pacers publications. I tweet about them way too much. At my Twitter handle is at TEastNBA if you want to follow me and get up to date with a team that is on the rise and looks like they could be pretty good this year.
Yeah. All right. So let's get right into it. Lance Stevenson. So right after the LeBron James signing happened, Lakers Nation we were beside ourselves in clear euphoria. And then all of a sudden, the signing started to roll in. KCP signing, okay, that's fine. JaVale McGee, that's funny, but I guess that guy can, you know, catch lobs and stuff. And then the Lance Stevenson thing happened, and we're like, wait, what? Probably the most curious signing of this offseason for the Lakers. I guess I brought you on this show to give us a little insight on Lance Stevenson, his last 2 years with Indiana. I think he was traded mid-season 2016-17, right?
He started on Memphis. He got cut. The Pelicans picked him up on a 10-day. He got cut. The Timberwolves picked him up on a 10-day. He did good. He got another 10-day. And then he got hurt, so he got cut. And then the Pacers signed him at the end of the year. So he was kind of all over the place that season.
And that's kind of been indicative of Lance Stevenson's career since his breakout year with Indiana in 2013-14, I believe. Yeah, 2013-14. It feels like 2016-17 was a microcosm of Lance Stevenson's career. But having said that, and having been back with Indiana the last year and some change, I guess I wanted to ask you first, as weird and quirky and bipolar as Lance Stevenson seems off the court and on the court, how is he viewed by Indiana fans? Obviously, I just mentioned he had his breakout season there back in 2013-14, averaging 14 points, 5 assists, 7 rebounds. That summer, he didn't end up getting the big deal he wanted after his career year, and then since then has bounced around everywhere and has been kind of this volatile, very poor man's version of Draymond Green or Tyreek Evans.
Oh, about as poor as you can get.
Poor as you can get. But yeah, how do Indiana fans view Lance Stevenson? Viewed him back then, viewed him now since his return to Indy. Has the fact that expectations have been a little more tempered in his return changed things? And yeah, how do Indiana fans view Lance Stevenson?
13-14, Lance was special in a way that not very many players are special, you know. You wouldn't, like, it's hard to, like, have this view in retrospect unless you really kept up with the team that year, but, I mean, there were a lot of people clamoring that he should be an all-star that year over someone like Kyle Lowry. You know, you just named off those stats, you know, 14 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists per game, but also he was the best defender on the team on the perimeter. And, you know, he energizes an entire stadium by just being who he is. You know, and then that was the postseason where he blew in LeBron's ear. He did the fake death, the fake death Simba thing where he got up and he was just fine. You know, All that stuff just captures the hearts of your home fans. So when the Hornets blew him out of the water with their offer, you know, and he left Indiana, it was kind of upsetting for fans at the time. But then he stunk everywhere. You know, there's a reason he went to six teams in three seasons, and it was kind of like a blessing that they didn't give him the 4-for-44 he got that summer. But then he came back. I just talked about that six-game period. He came back last year, and it was kind of amazing because not that many people from the 13-14 team were left, but a lot of, like, the staff were and stuff like that. So he walks in, and all these, like, staffers are like, Lance, what's up? And, like, everyone's all hype and excited for him, and all the players are like, who the hell is this guy? It was a pretty interesting time, but it did not take long for him to recaptivate the fan excitement for him. You know, he played air guitar during a few games this year. Y'all saw what he does against LeBron and other teammates, which is outstanding. which is just hilarious. I want to talk about that later. But yeah, you know, somehow he plays better in Bankers Life Fieldhouse than any other stadium in the world. I can't even explain it, and I watch every game this guy plays. He's just more, like, in home games, he's just more free, and he's not afraid to be Lance, and I think when he plays more comfortably, he's just better. And that's always been the case for him in Indiana. And I think that if Lakers fans embrace him in that way, he can be that kind of player who's still way better at home than on the road. But, you know, he's so beloved in that way. You asked how fans feel about him because of how he was in 13-14. You know, they embraced him and let him be free. And then, you know, they loved him again because he kept up the antics and was Lance Stephenson, basically. So he was really popular as a player, even though he might not have been the best player, if that's fair.
No, totally. And, you know, I'm looking at his stats back in 2013-14. I'm not talking about the season stats, but even just the playoff stats. Mm-hmm. You know, almost 14.7 rebounds, 4 assists in the playoffs, with not that bad shooting percentages, 45% from the field and 36% from three. And then, you know, when he came back to the Pacers, he did play 4 games in the playoffs after that at age 26 and averaged 16 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 assists. And last year, obviously, he was in a much more reduced role, only playing about 20 minutes per game. And you can give your input and what you thought about his playoff run against LeBron James in those 7 games. But as a role player with a reduced role, 10 points, 2.7 rebounds and 2.9 assists isn't bad on 46% shooting. But before we get into his game, I guess you guys have had a similar mercurial and bipolar player in the past in Ron Artest / Meta World Peace. I guess, how would you compare the two players? Obviously, Lance Stephenson is nowhere near as close to the caliber of player Ron Artest was, but in terms of just the energy and personality that they provide, are they similar in any way?
You nailed it in that they're not similar players, and I think that makes them hard to compare because the biggest difference is that Ron Artest is good at basketball, and Lance Stephenson is not as good at basketball.
Sure.
But Lakers fans didn't ever get to see good Ron because when he went there, he was not as good. But yeah, I mean, Artest, it was a very bitter relationship. You know, at first he was really beloved because, you know, they traded Jalen Rose for him. He was a really good player, and then the brawl happened. And he was such a big part of that. He missed the entire rest of the season. And me and a lot of other Pacers people will tell you that the Pacers would have won the 2004 championship against the Lakers, ironically, if Artest doesn't get thrown out of that game and miss the whole season. So the brawl really left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouth. And so Ron Artest was not loved in the way Lance was. But his antics were different in that he was more like gritty, like those Pistons teams in the late 80s, where Lance is like funny in his antics, if that makes sense. So they're similar, but in a very different way.
Yeah, for sure, I get that. Okay, so going into his game now and how his game has evolved or not evolved the last few years, do you think he's sort of settled into his role now as a role player, especially last year? Can you give me some insight into how last year played out for him during the season and during the playoffs? And do you feel like he's at a comfortable place in his life now to really embrace just being a solid rotation player? You know, Pritchard came out with that statement this offseason when we all learned that the Pacers actually wanted him back. You know, they actually had a better offer than the Lakers. I think they were both one-year deals, but the Pacers did offer him more money, so it's not like this guy was totally unwanted. But Kevin Pritchard did say quote unquote, sometimes he was the best player on our team and sometimes he was the best player on the other team. Do you think that still characterizes Lance Stephenson? And yeah, I guess how would you characterize his last season with the Pacers?
I absolutely agree with that statement, 100%. I wrote about him today, actually, ironically, if you want to check it out on 8.9 seconds. But yeah, I have some clips in there of him winning games for the Pacers and some of him losing games for the Pacers. You know, it's just who he is. But I think that is what made him finally better than he was for the last three seasons, is he did, like you're asking, embrace that he's a role player now. That's what he is. But what helped him, too, besides being in Indiana, is that their second unit last year was kind of devoid of any shot creators. And Lance is actually, you know, that's probably his best skill, is he's pretty good off the dribble. He can create his own shot. He's not as good at creating shots for others because he's a little wild with his passing sometimes. But yeah, he can create his own shot off the dribble, and that really sparked the second unit. They had a ball handler that wasn't a point guard. They needed that when Victor Oladipo was on the bench. And Lance stepped into that role just fine. And I think, you know, with the way the Lakers have constructed their roster, first of all, I'm not sure how much Lance will play. He can play 2 and 3, but yeah, with, you know, KCP, Ingram, Hart, and all those guys, you know, I'm not sure how much he'll play, but, you know, in this design that it looks like you guys are going for with LeBron at center, or mostly in the post, and the guards are creating and running, he fits that really well in that he's very energetic on defense and he keeps his hands up and makes stuff happen there. He's deceivingly fast for his size. He can handle the ball. He can run. So I think he does actually fit what they're trying to do in that manner. And I think that him embracing the role player in LA will be very possible. So I think that that was part of their sales pitch to him in their contract negotiations.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing with Lance Stephenson is trying to catch all that frenetic energy, try to hone it and rein it in, right? And if you can do that and you're able to do that more times than not, then he becomes an effective player, even in spite of his erraticness. I guess looking at his role last year versus when he was with, you know, those Eastern Conference Finals contending Pacers teams with George Hill, David West, Roy Hibbert, and Paul George, would you agree with the statement that when he's around, obviously last year he wasn't around as many veteran, more experienced, high-profile players who kind of had the cachet to put him in his place? But would you agree that that's when he's at his best, especially looking back on those 2013 teams with George Hill and David West and Paul George? And I'm just wondering because, you know, we don't have very many veterans on the Lakers upcoming year, but we do have LeBron James and Rajon Rondo. And do you think having those types of personalities who won, these are very smart, high IQ players, but also they are such big personalities in the locker room, do you think that will help to kind of rein him in a little bit? Instead of last year, he did great, but he also was around Victor Oladipo, who was trying to prove himself, Miles Turner, who's still trying to prove himself, and not necessarily guys who have the cachet to be like, hey, Lance, sit your ass down. You're not going to do this for us. So yeah, do you think that with LeBron James and Rajon Rondo, like having their presence would help Lance Stephenson a bit?
You know what's interesting? The Pacers had a really good locker room last year, and Lance was a big part of that. But, you know, as antically, all right, that's the wrong word, as wild and crazy Lance is on the court, off the court, he's very level-headed and reasonable. And I don't think he'll ever be a locker room problem per se. But I do think, you know, having someone as high up, you know, especially as LeBron, who just commands all attention at all times, you know, I think that can only help him. I mean, focus is his biggest issue on the court, right? If you have LeBron out there telling you to focus, you're going to snap in and focus. So that can only help him on the court. I don't think off the court, though, you know, I don't know if that's exactly what you were talking about, but yeah, he's a really good locker room guy in general. You wouldn't think that by watching him play or hearing him speak, ironically, but, you know, everyone enjoys being around him. He's funny. He's always cracking people up after the game. He never throws anyone under the bus. You know, we ran a story a while ago about Monte Ellis and how cancerous he was to the locker room. And I asked Lance, you know, I was asking everybody who was on the team with Monte about it, and they were like, yeah, it was kind of rough, you know, we didn't always get along. And I asked Lance, like, hey, what was the locker room like that year? He's like, oh, I had a blast, like, everybody was awesome, yeah, we had so much fun, you know, me and Monte are boys still. I was like, okay, well, not putting that quote in the story, but he just gets along with everybody. So, you know, I mean, when it's time to get serious, if LeBron can whip him into serious mode, I really think he'll be fine with the group of veterans they have, and Rondo too, I guess. But I don't know how much Rondo is going to have an effect over the team when LeBron's commanding everybody.
Oh, for sure. No, but that's a really interesting tidbit that I don't think a lot of people know who aren't Pacers fans, just the fact that Lance seems to be a very personable, buddy-buddy type of guy who can really, you know, be a glue guy in terms of chemistry on the team, especially if even with a problem teammate like Monte Ellis, he's not burning bridges. So that, I mean, that's honestly very comforting to hear, even just in terms of even if he's not playing that much, the fact that he can be a solid presence for our young guys, I think is important. The less swaggy penis that we can get, the better. And I think, you know, Lance Stephenson has some of that, as we've seen from the In Your Feelings Challenge dance videos that he's been putting out. But, you know, that also kind of fits with the young core dynamic that the Lakers have going on. Ironically, LeBron James loves to dance as well. This team is so interesting, to be honest with you. And I'm looking forward to how they balance out the chummy goofiness of their young team and trying to get serious for the playoffs and trying to flip this team into being a contending team in one season. So that'll be interesting. But I guess along the same lines, if you want to give me your unfiltered thoughts on learning that Lance Stephenson was signed by the Los Angeles Lakers and that LeBron James is now his teammate.
Yeah, I'm kind of a stat dork. So my original reaction was he's gone. Like, it's over. You know, like, he's not a very good jump shooter. And every time he'd shoot a three in my head or even out loud on occasion, I would be like, no. and he made enough of them that he didn't, you know, he didn't earn that. That's not really fair for me. Like, he's about a 30% shooter, from threes. That's not like so bad, but, he was probably the worst player on the team that played big minutes. So I was kind of happy that he went away, but at the same time, and this is in the story I wrote today, you know, the fan, like, Lance was, besides Victor Oladipo, Lance was the Pacers fan experience. Like, that was devastating to so many people in Indiana, and it's hard not to sympathize with people who just lost their smile, you know, like that's what they paid for money to see on the court. So, you know, it was tough because my initial reaction was like, I was happy that the team's going to be, you know, probably better from this move. But at the same time, I was sad because, you know, all the people that fill up the stadium seats are not as happy. So that's always a tough balance for the GM, but it was a weird feeling for me.
And you obviously found him teaming up with LeBron James thing hilarious.
Absolutely hysterical. Yeah, I'm sorry. I forgot to zero in on that part of the answer. Yeah, and even in this playoffs, you know, I'm sure Lakers fans have seen it now if they hadn't actually live. You know, they wrestled for a jump ball, and then Lance held it up like Simba, baby Simba from The Lion King, and, you know, the whole stadium is roaring, and, you know, he did the flopping, and he's like the only guy you can get LeBron's head on his other team. So I wonder if that's why LeBron was like, I want him. You know, I don't have to play against this guy anymore. So that's probably an interesting aspect of the mental game. I really wonder how much that had to do with it. But yeah, that's going to be some treat, them playing together. I hope they joke around all the time. That would make me happy.
Oh, totally. And I guess in terms of, we know that on the court, in terms of mentality and his intensity, he brings it, as we've seen with his bouts with LeBron James. But if we extract that tangibly in terms of his actual defense, you mentioned in his breakout season in 2013-14 that he was tremendous defensively. I don't think people would agree that that's been the case the last few years. So in terms of his consistency on defense now, how much has he regressed defensively? Do you still think that in a pinch, if you need him to go guard a guy one-on-one, that he'll be able to bring it? Or do you think it's just a matter of, like, he's just not as consistent as he once was, and he's just not as disciplined as he once was? Or do you still think at the very least he can be this annoying, pesky type of defender that if he's not getting in people's grills physically, then at least he can get into their heads?
You know, what he is really good at on D is he was really good at being in the 2013-14 Pacers defensive scheme. You know, that team, every single player in the starting five was a really good defender. George Hill, you know, Roy Hibbert, that was when he was like destroying the New York Knicks franchise with his defense. Like, that whole team could defend everybody. And Lance was really good at playing with those guys. You know, he would force guys to Hibbert. He would draw guys towards Paul George on the other side. He would, you know, help George Hill out in pick and rolls in a pinch. Like, he was really good at that. But when it comes to, like, more general defensive schemes, or he has to, you know, play off the ball a bit more, you know, he falls asleep, or when he has to close out really hard, he goes too hard and blows by the guy, you know, things like that, he's not as good at. And I, you know, the Lakers aren't going to run the 13-14 Pacers defensive scheme. It's just, they don't have the right personnel for it. So he's going to be not that good of a defender. You know, he's going to be at best what he was last year. And he's good on ball. You know, he's energetic, he's quick with his feet, and he gets in your face. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that he's not very good at. You know, he just falls asleep. He doesn't really care about defense that much, if we're being honest, unless it really matters, which on-ball defense does. So in that aspect, for you guys, I don't know if his defense will be something that ever gets him put in the game. But if they really need to, like, LeBron's tired, they need someone to guard the ball for one possession, he could do it. But if it's like a 5-minute stretch, he's not going to get you anything.
Gotcha. Do you think his reduced role and has helped him in any way, kind of just in spurts, give more effort, be more honed in, have more discipline, or it's still kind of a roller coaster?
Yeah, it depends on what Lance you get. If you get confident Lance, absolutely playing in spurts is good. I forget, I didn't end up finishing the season with this stat, but I ran a story about halfway through the year about his shooting splits in games where he makes his first shot versus doesn't make his first shot. Mm-hmm. And it's like he shoots like 49% in games where he makes his first shot and like 36% when he misses his first shot.
That's
like,
amazing.
Yeah, he's so affected by his own feelings, and I think every player is to a degree, but I feel like he is more than others. And so, you know, if you can get him to be confident and playing, you know, I'm Lance, I can do this. Yeah, he's a good jolty role player, like you just said. But if he's kind of in his head and not focused completely, which on LeBron's team, who knows how much that'll happen, he can really burn your team and be like Pritchard said, the best player for the other team.
Right, right. Okay, so you had mentioned that in the Pacers' defensive scheme, he was phenomenal, and he mm-hmm. knew how to channel offensive players in the right direction, right? So it sounds like if there is a solid defensive scheme in place, that you can actually possibly extract the most out of Lance Stephenson. And I'm only trying to wrestle with these thoughts because, you know, the Lakers last year, they didn't necessarily have the best defenders on the floor, but somehow they managed to get to league average, like right or better than league average, actually. They finished either 13th or 12th in defensive efficiency. And I think a lot of that was just communication. And I'm not sure how tight their defensive scheme is, but would you say that if somehow they're able to develop something that's intuitive and as similarly structured to the Pacers scheme, or just has structure to it, is I guess what I'm getting at. Do you think that he fits better when it's kind of laid out for him in a blueprint sort of way and he knows what to do instead of a team and system where it's kind of just left free for all on defense, I guess?
Yeah, he's better when he has a rim protector behind him. I don't know if that's on purpose or not, but his defensive rating when he played with Domantas Sabonis, who is not a rim protector at all, was like north of 110, like at 111, worst in the NBA levels of bad defense. Yeah, but when he played with Miles Turner, you know, that was like 108.5 or like 81, you know, like 4 points lower, 3 or 4 points lower. You know, he's a lot better, and that's why he's so good with Hibbert, is that he's just better at channeling guys in the right ways when he knows he's got someone good behind him. And this is not a knock on the Lakers big man. Like, it's not a surprise that JaVale McGee and Ivica Zubac cannot defend the rim. So I don't think that will help him, but I think LeBron at center could help him. LeBron's just good on D at everything. He doesn't try, so obviously he's a negative a lot, but when he does try, he's a good defender. So I think that could help him, and I think that's what really helps a lot. And playing next to Paul George, sometimes he wasn't guarding the best perimeter player. Like, that scheme was perfect for him. So, but yeah, there is a way that the Lakers could make that happen. Yeah, like you said, I think Luke Walton really got them to buy in on D last year. And it was amazing how he got Swaggy P to play D at the end of 2 years ago.
Yeah, no, totally.
So, yeah, it's certainly possible. And the Lakers love getting these fun guys and kind of doing reclamation projects. So I'm sure they could find the right defensive scheme for him, but I don't think they have the right personnel to make the scheme that would work for Lance work in LA, if that makes sense.
So you're saying we need a trade for Carl Anthony Towns and he'll be great?
Or sure.
Maybe Porzingis, someone who can actually protect the rim, or Clint Capella.
Yeah.
Or Steven if JaVale Adams. McGee is actually able to, I'm not even going to say take that leap, but he is a rim protector in a sense. And presumably speaking, if Lance Stephenson and JaVale McGee are only both playing around 10 to 15 minutes, how funny would it be to have that Shaqt and a Fool duo out on the floor at all times? And it's funny to think about now, but given just the what you just described about Lance Stephenson and the type of personnel he needs around him, for spurts, Lance Stephenson and JaVale McGee might actually work. Who knows?
You know what? I don't get to talk about the Lakers enough, so I'll go on a tiny rant just because I get to talk about the Lakers. JaVale McGee is an underrated basketball player. He gets all this hate from the Shaqton days when he was in Washington. And I actually grew up a Wizards fan, so I watched a fair bit of those. But like now that he's not falling down when he runs down the court and doing stuff on the wrong basket and stuff, like he's effective catching lobs. He sets good screens. Like you said, he's okay enough as a rim protector. Like JaVale McGee is not a terrible basketball player. And I think that he's fun. And I think that he and Lance are going to have such a good time together that they might just end up being a good duo. They could be a disastrous, like, shagged and awful duo too, but there's a way that those two work out well together, and I'm here for it.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm very much looking forward to all of the three-point dance celebrations and handshakes that LeBron James, Lance Stephenson, and JaVale McGee come up with.
I can't wait.
It should be a very, very interesting season for the Lakers, and we can only hope that also translates to the court. I guess, okay, to end this show, what do you think he can bring? And you mentioned it a little bit earlier. What do you think he can bring offensively in 15-minute spurts throughout the season? You know, throughout his career, regardless of how up and down he's been with his percentages and just being able to snag on with a team, one thing he's always been great at is rebounding. I mean, he always finishes in like the top percentile of getting defensive rebounds. And the Lakers as a team, their whole strategy coming into next season is run, 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 get the rebound, push the ball ahead. And on top of it, like you mentioned it earlier, but Lance Stephenson is pretty good as a primary initiator and primary playmaker. Is it an adventure? Yes. But at least, you know, in a pinch, this guy can handle the ball, break his man down. And that's, I think, with regards to what LeBron James just experienced, pretty much his entire career, but as he's been aging, and especially last year, he has specifically said that he wants more ball handlers. He doesn't want to always have the ball in his hands and have to create. And 15 minutes a night, Lance Stephenson with the ball, if LeBron is tired and if the shot clock is running down and the Lakers' offensive set has broken down, I think someone like that could help. Sometimes we get a Jordan Clarkson adventure, but I think Lance Stephenson is on this team specifically because he has had playoff experience. So I guess, what would you say about Lance's offensive contributions to a team like the Lakers and what the Lakers are trying to do this next year?
Yeah, I think he has to be with the right guys to be that effective ball handler, because he needs a good screener and he needs a little bit of space. So I don't think surrounding him with like Lonzo or you wouldn't have Lonzo and Rondo, but one of Lonzo or Rondo, I think you have to have it be Lonzo. I think Rondo and him would not work too well. And I think if you have him in there, you're going to need Ingram or KCP out there just for the shooting. Mm-hmm. And I think he would play really well with Mo Wagner as a pick and roll slash pop guy. Mo Wagner could suck, but it looks like he's going to be a good NBA player from some summer league and stuff. So you have to be in with the right guys to be peak effectiveness. But yeah, off the dribble, he can do the stuff LeBron wants him to do, and he can push. And I think him and LeBron together would work just fine. Lance has actually okay basketball instincts for being a goofball all the time. He always cuts to the right spot when like the defense breaks down and stuff like that. So I think if LeBron's drawing a bunch of attention, Lance could help there too. And if there's ever somehow a lineup where Lance is the best dribbler on this Lakers team, that would mean he's surrounded by probably JaVale, Kuzma, Ingram, and let's go Sfi. So he's got some shooters around him, so he could thrive in that group too. So it's all lineup dependent, but I think he can figure out his role.
No, those are very good points. And I think what I'm most excited about is just the transition opportunity that hopefully he can be in, especially as a guy who fights for rebounds and can push the ball himself and also throw some pretty nifty and flashy passes. In fact, if you watch a Lance Stephenson highlight video, man, if you didn't know his stats or what he's done negatively, you'd be like, this guy's an all-star. He's amazing. He's like an and-one street ball. Like, yeah, I guess that just lends itself to who he is as a bipolar, erratic, best player one night, best player for the other team the next night kind of player. But in that sense, it's exciting, right?
It's the best adventure you'll never want to have again.
Well, yeah, I guess we'll see. And we only have him for 1 year. But, Tony, thanks for coming on tonight. I actually learned a lot about Lance Stephenson, and not only in terms of his off-court, how he is off court with his teammates and in the locker room, but also how he fit into the Indiana Pacers scheme and what best suits him. And with a player like him environment and what you put around him is so important, right?
I 100% agree. I'm glad that he's in a fun environment. I think that will suit him well. The Lakers are going to be obscenely fun.
Yeah, hopefully that lends itself to wins as well and turning into a contending team. But I'm along for the ride and the adventure. And this is going to be fun. Or now Very it's going to be fun. Whatever that Steve Nash White Howard.
The best Sports Illustrated cover ever. Gosh.
I know. So Tony, thanks again for coming on. I can't believe we have gone 40 minutes into this talking about Lance Stephenson somehow, but we did it. It's summer. Before you head out, why don't you once again just plug all your stuff? And if you have anything coming down the pipeline, you can do so as well.
It's at T East, like the direction NBA on Twitter. All of my stuff mostly right now is out at 8 points, 9 seconds because there's no games for me to write for the paper. We just started a series, our love-hate series, where you write some stuff we love and hate about every player. We don't use the word hate, though, because that's too strong for articles, apparently. little mini rant there. It's going well. Pacers are really actually interesting now after a few years in the slog fest. So hop on in and read. You'll learn something.
Awesome. Thank you once again for coming on. And you guys got Tyreke Evans, man. That's Woo. The guy we should have gotten. But we pretty much flip-flopped Lance Stephenson and Tyreke Evans, and you got the richer version. But hey, all good, man. I'm happy that you guys somehow were able to make it through that very dark Paul George time. You know, and now we're on the same page. We can be petty about Paul George. That guy sucks, dude.
Nah, he's awesome.
No, you know, he's
big,
awesome.
Okay. I'm a big Paul George guy. Okay. I get what you guys are the team that's allowed to slander him. Pacers fans are not. He almost got them to the finals twice. Lakers fans can rip him more than we can.
You guys didn't feel betrayed by him at all, and just him being a people pleaser, saying the right things, but doing something, you know, his actions not following through with that.
It's like a breakup. Like, it sucks, but eventually you just remember the good stuff, right?
That's fair. All right, with that said, thank you once again for coming on the Lakers Legacy Podcast, and you know, yeah, let's have you on again sometime soon when Lance Stephenson does something idiotic or if he does something amazing. So who knows?
You bet. Or for a Lakers-Pacers game. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right. We'll catch you later.